The field of wearable technology has grown a lot over the last few years. Devices like Google Glass and Apple Watches made a lot of the headlines, but the technology has a lot of different uses, from fashion to health and fitness to gaming. And now we can add music making to that list. Seth Thorne is a professor in ASU School of Arts, Media, and Engineering and teaches a class on wearable music. He stopped by the studios recently with one of his students, ASU junior and musician Christian Jeffries, to talk about the technology and where it could be headed. And Thorne started by explaining what wearable music actually is.
Wearable music is a nice pun, I think, that captures the kind of playfulness of working with wearable technology and music. You know, it's suggesting that you can wear this music. You can put it on your body and wear it anyhow we're using wearable technology. And I think maybe the bigger picture here is that, you know, electronic music tends to be defined by really combative tropes, you know, triggers and controllers and bangs and these kinds of things. And wearable music gets you away from that.
How did you get into this?
I got into this through my violin work. So I'm a violinist, and I do lots of interesting things with my instrument, with the computer, process the sound. And I had developed a glove interface with some movement sensors on it and got pretty good at doing that. And then I decided that I wanted to maybe give it to somebody else who's not a violinist. So I put it on a dancer and started working with her, and then I started working with groups of dancers. And then eventually it turned into a class.
Christian, what appeals to you about this type of music and maybe this type of technology?
Well, I think it's almost like it's gotten to a point where it's like seamless, like the interaction between the music and the computation, like the software and everything. So like when you're doing these gestures, when you're putting it on clothes, when you're using props, it's like you're almost bringing these like inanimate objects to life. It's just this like this little connection between movement and automation that like makes things feel more alive.
How does it work in terms of the actual music making? Like if somebody is wearing one of these or holding one of these instruments, how does that work and how do they know what it's going to sound like?
Well, there are a few different techniques that I show my students. One that's a lot of fun is to take the gyroscope, which measures angular velocity. And every time you move, you know, 20 degrees, you get a little click. You get some kind of a trigger, right? Some kind of a click. So you're turning, and it's click, 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 and you get this ratcheting sound. And then you can take those clicks, basically, and make those into musical notes or a bunch of other things. You could have some music that's playing, and those clicks come in, and they sample little bits of the audio that's coming in and kind of spatialize them and throw them around. So, yeah, just really basic features. Map to lots of really interesting musical effects, and you pile those up, make it very dense, and then it's a very rich and fun instrument.
All right, so Seth, let's listen to you playing one of these devices. Let's take a listen to how it sounds. I want to ask you about it after we've listened to it.
Sure. I'll start with a video that I made actually a little bit before the class. This is just one instrument. I'm using it with my hand and moving it very gently. And it's basically a whole group here of instruments.
So that sounds like music.
It does. Thank you.
So do you know, as you are moving it around, as you're playing it, do you know what it's going to sound like?
Well, to a certain extent, I mean, because these instruments are really programmed. I mean, in this case, I decided on a particular musical scale that I'm using, you know, pentatonic scale, and I'm transposing the scale each time I flick my wrist one way or the other. If I flick my wrist one way, I also get a kick drum, and I go the other way and I get a snare. And every time I get a kick, I get a new bass tone, which changes the chord. So it's really program. There's a lot going on, but you know, this weekend we were at the Musical Instrument Museum giving this instrument to people to try out, and it was really interesting to see all the different ways they used it because they don't know how it's programmed.
Right.
But you can figure it out pretty quickly.
Listening to you talk about it, I have visions of Dick Van Dyke and Mary Poppins as the one-man band, you know, with the drums on his back and the cymbals on his legs. Like, you can do so many things with a device that fits in the palm of your hand.
Yeah, I love that image. Thank you. Yes, that's correct. Yeah, in this case, it's a very dense instrument, and actually, it requires very little movement to get it activated. And this was developed in the context of a National Science Foundation grant for students who are neurodivergent. And so we were thinking that maybe we could develop instruments that are for people who are maybe severely disabled and movement limited. So just barely moving and getting this rich response.
So, Christian, let's talk about this instrument that you have, which is basically a circular disc plugged into a USB cable.
Yeah.
How does it work?
Yeah, so there are sensors on this board, right? So in the videos that I posted, I mainly use the microphone, the sound sensor, right? So when the sound gets higher, when there's more sound, I can use that data, right? So, you know, think of like a number, right? So if there's a lot of sound, it's not zero, right? It's 100 out of whatever the maximum is, right? And so you can use that number to then manipulate other sources, right? So if I'm, let's say, messing around in my music software and I have just one synth playing one note, I can make it so that way when I blow on it and it gets more input, I can change the note. So then if there's more input, the note gets higher. If there's less input, the note gets lower.
And the input is the air here?
Well, it's sound, any sound. So whether it's like a dog barking or me clapping my fingers or blowing into it or anything.
So let's listen to one of the TikTok videos that you made. And this, how many
this
views
one has
this had?
9.2 million views.
That's a lot of views.
Yeah, yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
All right, let's take a listen to that one.
Cool.
All right, so Christian, you're basically blowing into this instrument. There are colored lights that are coming on, and it looks like that's really it, and you're making all that music.
Yeah, it's relatively simple. I mean, when you break it down into like what's controlling what, it's really just this microphone controlling a bunch of different parameters, right? And one thing I did in that video is that every time you blew into it again, so it would lost all of its input, and then it got the microphone gets input again. It changes the bass note. So then now, not only are you changing the top end, the melody notes, you can also just change this whole composition, right? So you're changing the bass note on top of the same kind of melody, and you can create these really interesting like compositions just by blowing on this thing.
Seth, can you envision a time when there might be ensembles all playing wearables or orchestras playing wearable instruments?
Well, the concept of a laptop orchestra has been around actually for quite a while.
Sure, yeah.
You know, and I think we've kind of gotten away from that a little bit because people are tired of just working with the computer as their medium, as the interface, you know. So whenever you can work with something that's just not a screen and not a keyboard and not a mouse and get that playfulness back, like hearing Christian on that video, I mean, he's playing it very expressively. It's a very expressive,
yeah,
short performance, mm-hmm, but it's really nice. And, you know, you would struggle to get that if you're just using a laptop.
How do you make it if you are playing with other people so that it doesn't become dissonant? Or maybe does that not matter?
That's a good question. I think it depends on how you set up the piece, right?
So Mark's bringing up a really good point here, which is a good question. So a good expressive instrument needs to be able to sound bad, okay? That's a criterion. And so what we're doing here is, you know, we're playing with things and experimenting, and I'm not sure if we're to the point where we have a musical instrument that has so much expressive ability that it can sound bad, because we can go in here and just make it play all the notes, all the correct notes in the right scale, and make sure everybody's playing that scale and do that. So that's a question, you know, do we want to make it really easy to have everything sound good all the time? Or maybe sounding good all the time doesn't actually sound that good. You know, there needs to be a little bit of room for, yeah, making mistakes.
All of this kind of raises the question about maybe the future and future performances and uses for these instruments. Can you have a score? Can you have a piece of music that is written for these instruments, Christian?
I think so. I think it just depends on the context. It's funny that you say that because now I'm thinking like you could have like, you know, like you have the sheet music. It's like tilt up on measure four and then everyone has like their device and they tilt it up. Because you can definitely time it and you can definitely compose pieces with multiple people. I mean, we haven't really explored that aspect in the classes, at least with having multiple different of these controllers and creating like a multi-person symphony, I guess. But I can totally see where that could fit in. Like if you have a section or even the whole piece, everyone's using some kind of wearable or MIDI controller or something, and you could definitely tilt this much, you know, tilt like maybe there are measurements on the board or something on a case that tells you, right? So it's a little bit more precise and you can kind of control a little bit more instead of it being like this, oh, I just kind of tilt it. It's like, no, you tilt it on first level, second level, or you blow on it here and there's a rest and everything on the score. And so, yeah, that's actually a really cool idea. Like I didn't think of that.
I think, I mean, a score would certainly be interesting, but I think one of the most exciting things here is that we can work improvisatorily. I did work with dancers, and we made these collectively playable instruments. And people, you know, there were statistical relations, you know, that would be picked up. And so you could tell if people were all facing one direction or if people were all facing different directions. And then the musical response started to become like a sensory organ. People could, you know, figure out where other people were. I think it's this kind of live work that's where the big potential is. How can we condition through the sound what people do when they're improvising? You know, do we really need to still be doing musical writing when we're at the point where, yeah, this sonic actualization happens immediately, you know?
Seth Thorne, Christian Jeffries, thanks you both for the conversation. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.